Thanks for downloading our podcast. You can find out more about Tech Tent from our webpage. Go to bbcworldservice.com/techtent. Hello and welcome to Tech Tent, your essential weekly guide to the technology business. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones, and this week we'll be finding out how your computer could be secretly earning cryptocurrency, but not for you. We'll discuss what Google's new devices say about its mission to be a force in hardware, and we meet the man who's taking on the online scammers. With me is BBC technology correspondent Mark Ward, our guru on all cybersecurity matters. Hello, Mark. Good to have you back in the tent. And my special guest is Emily Orton from the cybersecurity company Darktrace. Welcome, Emily.
Hi, Rory.
Here's a taste of what's coming up.
You write back to me saying, oh, I won money, what do I do? And you play them along and you get them to do silly things or you just have fun with them. And all the information you get, you post up online.
Parents are going to love this feature. Kids are going to hate this feature. But that's what makes it useful.
All of that soon. First this week, is your computer or mobile phone making money for someone else without your permission? We've reported on this program on the boom in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. These currencies are created by a process called mining, which involves computers solving increasingly complex sums. Now, in recent months, we've seen software developed that enables websites to employ their visitors' computers or smartphones to mine these cryptocurrencies. Sometimes these websites tell users, sometimes they don't. Now, Mark Ward, you've been researching this story. What is this software and who's behind it?
Well, there's quite a few variants of it, but the one that we've seen used most recently is CoinHive. And this is it's quite a simple thing. It's just a little script, but web people running a website or a group of websites put it on there. And then when you turn up, your computer takes on some of the load of mining those that cryptocurrency. And that's useful because with cryptocurrencies, the more computers you can throw at that complicated maths problem, the faster you solve it, and the more chance you're going to get rewarded with some of the coins that eventually, maybe hopefully one day, you'll be able to exchange for real cash.
Why would websites want to use it, and are they telling people about it?
Well, some of them are. I think that's part of the problem here is that some are being very upfront and saying, yes, but this might cost you, might make your computer go, whoo, because the fans come on and it's doing a lot of work for them. But also some webmasters aren't, and some webmasters have been caught out by scammers. And I think the ones that are using it legitimately want to try and offset ads, basically. They don't want to stop using ads, use this instead. But as we said, you have to have a pretty big audience to make some money. One of the estimates by CoinHive suggests if you have 1 million visitors a month, you'll make about $100. So, you know, and not many people have 1 million visitors a month. So I think the returns are going to be pretty small.
And as you indicated, as is so often is the case, fraudsters have got in on the act here.
They have, that's right, yeah. We've seen one survey by a security researcher who said they found a few hundred websites have been hit. CoinHive has been quite active in stopping that. And I managed to talk to security researcher Rick Ferguson from Trend Micro, who's been following this for a while, and about why these scripts are proving attractive to cyber crooks.
It's certainly been something which has been ongoing for a number of years. But I guess, you know, as the value of bitcoins increases and the associated difficulty in mining bitcoins increases as time goes on, then any capability you can develop that will help you to take advantage of an effectively distributed computing platform to do coin mining is going to be to your advantage. And I guess from an attacker's perspective, it's one of those attacks that hopefully can remain invisible, unlike obviously ransomware is a great example, where it's extremely visible because it's designed to be.
For the bad guys, it solves a problem in that with a ransomware, you have, I suppose, always the chance that someone's got a good backup and just ignores you. But with coin mining, if you're doing the mining, then potentially you're making money right from the start.
Well, right from the start, maybe not, because you obviously got to solve work units to actually generate new cryptocurrency. But certainly you have developed and deployed that capability right from the start and you wait for it to pay off. But that's the huge attraction of being able to use, you know, other people's devices in a massively distributed fashion, because you then, you know, effectively take advantage of a huge amount of computing resources of whatever flavor, you know, whether that's an Android device or a Windows machine or, you know, maybe IoT devices, the more that's out there, and obviously that's increasing exponentially every year, the better for you as a criminal, because you get to distribute that workload across hundreds of thousands potentially of devices.
I mean, is it a growing thing? Something you're getting more worried about? Or is it, because the impression I get is that I'd imagine that most people who run a website find this script on there, they just kill it and say, oh, no, we don't want that. Because certainly if you get hit on a phone, then it's just going to drain your battery. But,
it's a question of finding the script in the first place. If you're hosting a WordPress site very often you're not hosting that yourself anyway. The person that is hosting it, your service provider, is probably hosting multiple different versions of blogs for multiple different customers. And the performance hit may very well go unnoticed for a very long period of time. And if there's nothing visible on the website to alert you, the owner of the blog, that it's been compromised, then you're simply not going to be aware.
That's Rick Ferguson of Trend Micro. Mark Ward, what's CoinHive, one of the major players behind all this, what have they had to say about it?
Well, we've been in touch with them this week, tried to get them to come on and talk to us, but they declined. But they did respond to a couple of questions we had about people who've been caught out by this, and they said they've been quite aggressive at helping those webmasters, the people that have been hit, and locking the accounts and closing down accounts that have been used in the scams.
Our special guest, Emily Orton from security firm Darktrace, this is quite a scary new threat for computer users. Is your firm sort of watching this, and have you got any advice for people?
Yes, we are watching it, and we actually, there was a time when we saw Bitcoin mining operations on organisations pretty much every day. And actually, this is sort of new type of mining.
And then being unaware of it.
And then being unaware of it. Maybe for many months. We had one of the biggest banks in Europe and their data centres, a lot of computing power there in their data centres, had essentially been hijacked for a significant number of weeks. And they were completely unaware of that. And they'd been, their CPU had been being paid for essentially by the bank on behalf of the criminals. Another example, and I think is a big trend, is that you've got insiders in organisations that are taking advantage of these technologies. So we had one example of an employee that actually took a computer, company computer, homes, configured it to mine for Bitcoin, brought it back to the organisation, plugged it into the network, and actually had it hidden under the floorboards in the data centre.
Extraordinary, extraordinary.
So it was a completely hidden computer, and it was mining 24/7.
And briefly, for ordinary members of the public, it might be happening to your computer. Is there any advice?
Advice? The new thing on websites, it's really difficult. You don't know which websites and what they're running. It's a bit like cookies and you know, how much does Facebook track you? It's very difficult to keep a tab on that. It's a bit of a grey area. I think what you've got to do is make sure you're using trusted websites and you report things when they do look unusual.
And if your fan keeps coming on and your computer slows right down, you ought to be suspicious. We'll keep an eye on this story. But let's have a look at some of the other big tech stories of the week with Mark Ward. Mark, that Yahoo data breach back in 2013, which affected a billion people. Surely there can't be any more bad news about that one.
Oh, yes, there is. I think Yahoo should now stand yet another hack of ourselves, really, because that's pretty much what they are.
Good one.
It's the 2013, yeah. Initially it was a billion. Now they think, 3 billion, which is pretty much every account.
And just to be clear, this is its new owners, Verizon, the mobile phone company, have basically fessed up.
Exactly, yeah. They've had another look at that bad problem and it's got worse than they thought. Every account that was existing on Yahoo at that time in 2013. And there was also the separate attack in 2014 that hit 500 million people. So, yeah, not good news for Yahoo there.
Emily, our special guest, these numbers are just mind-boggling, aren't they?
It's really incredible, and it begs the question: how much more are we going to find out? You know, and so
I don't think it can get worse than 3 billion.
I don't know. You know,
you say that.
Another story. We love stories about better batteries, Mark, and you've got another one.
I have. And this one's quite dirty actually, because it involves carbon derived from asphalt, that stuff we use to make roads. And some folks at a university in Texas have found that if they make some bits of batteries with that pure carbon, they can charge up to 20 times faster than they do now. So that's from zero, no charge, flat, to fully charged in a few minutes. And even better, using that carbon seems to inhibit the creation of little structures that generally limit the life of a battery anyway.
Forgive me for being cynical. I've been talking about, and you've been talking about, stories about extending battery life forever, and yet my phone still runs out at lunchtime. What's going on?
I think there's a lot of... It's a big leap from lab to factory, and I think just that the heroic methods they use in the lab really don't translate into those mucky little factories. So I think that's the problem that's holding it up here. But everyone, lots of people working on it. Have hope, not cynicism.
Hold on.
hold on. It's coming, says Emily. You're hopeful. And a toy company has given up on plans for an artificially intelligent babysitter. What is it and why have they given up on it?
Well, this is Mattel. They announced this back in January, I think, at CES. It was something called Aristotle, which was supposed to monitor your kids, sing them lullabies, tell them stories, keep an eye on them in the bedroom, that kind of thing. Not at all creepy.
No.
No. And at the time, it didn't get a great reception. Can't think why. And the pressure on Mattel has grown ever since. They recently had a change of CTO who said, you know what, we're not going to, and this is now not part of their strategy. I think it was all kinds of questions about the data it was gathering, whether technology should be a surrogate parent, all kinds of things. So, yeah, it is not going to be on the shop shelves anytime soon.
Lots of companies wrestling with products that appear creepier than they are cool to many customers. You're listening to Tech 10 on the BBC World Service. I'm Rory Kethlin-Jones. In a moment, hitting back at the web scammers. First, though, Google has become one of the most powerful companies in the world on the back of software, from search to email, from the Chrome browser and Android operating system to YouTube. Its attempts to become a big name in hardware have been somewhat less successful, but it keeps on trying. This week, we saw the company unveil a range of new devices, and the message in the presentation was hardware is really all about software.
Well, you all know this better than anyone, but the playing field for hardware components is leveling off. To be honest, it's going to be tougher and tougher for people to develop new, exciting products each year, because that's no longer the timetable for big leaps forward in hardware alone. The next big innovation will happen at the intersection of AI, software, and hardware.
If you're like me, it can be hard to gather the household together for those family moments, like dinner time or movie night. Well, to help, we're launching a new feature called Broadcast. Just say, hey, Google, broadcast, it's time to leave for school.
Got it. Broadcasting now.
The assistant will broadcast the message to all the other Google Home devices in my house. Parents are going to love this feature. Kids are going to hate this feature. But that's what makes it useful.
Google's Rick Osterloh and Rishi Chandra launching a new range of Pixel smartphones and home intelligent speaker devices there. At a launch event in London, I put it to Crispin Lowry, managing director for hardware in Europe, that Google was hardly changing the world with its new devices.
Well, I think that's a little unfair to say. When you look at actually what we're trying to do with hardware is really bring the customer to the centre of it. So you haven't got a standalone hardware product that just sits on its own terms. You've got things like Google Photos working with the best smartphone camera in the world today. I mean, Google Assistant is incredibly helpful, and then the Google Home device itself just brings that to life.
If we go through them, the Pixel, very nice smartphone, 0.5% of global smartphone shipments, I think, was one speculative figure. Is it worth doing that, saying this is better than all other Android smartphones and running the risk of, you know, annoying companies like Samsung, which have put so much effort into making Android what it is today?
Yeah, I'm obviously not going to speculate on actual volumes, but we're building devices that lead the way in terms of customer experience. So it's great having Samsung working on the Android platform. They build some great hardware. But actually what you'll see with the Google Pixel is the integration of all of those services. Things like Google Photos working with our camera seamlessly. Things like the Google Assistant being so easy to access with just a squeeze on the device. So we're just making it really easy for consumers to use our products.
On the Google Home device, came quite a long time behind Amazon. You've now brought out a cheaper version, just as they've got a cheaper version. Aren't you playing catch-up there in that market?
Absolutely not. I think what you'll see with our devices, they're devices that truly sit in people's homes, both from the aesthetics, but also the user journey. The way people are actually going to use these devices is to do useful things. So we're really doubling down on actually how are you going to use them in the home. And I think what you've heard today around the broadcast facility, real, you know, life problems that you have. How do you get the kids downstairs when they're sat in their bedrooms playing games? Things that actually people want to face.
There was a lot of stress today on the fact that you've got these great skills in artificial intelligence, in machine learning, and that will translate through into world-leading devices. Aren't you a bit overconfident about that? Other companies have got more experience in actually producing the kind of devices that customers want.
I think hardware is only part of the story. So when you actually see the use cases that we've made from this, whether it's Translate actually working through your headphones, I think these are real world problems. So it's not just about the bits of kit. It's about how are you going to use them. And those are the problems that we're really trying to solve.
That's Crispin Lowry of Google. Yeah, lots of stress on AI there in those translating earbuds, which, of course, a bit of comment, translate 40 languages, apparently. A funny little camera called Clips, which will use AI to decide when to turn on. Again, sort of creepiness questions. Emily Orton from Darktrace, which boasts itself about its use of AI in its security products. AI has become such a catchphrase. Do consumers care about it? Is it really changing their lives?
It has. I think, you know, AI is a selling point. Well, it needs to mean something. It's, you know, on its own, it's not going to sell a product. It's about how does it make my life easier without being creepy. And I think it all comes down to trust at the end of the day. Irrespective of how you're using AI, you need to build a system that the consumer or the user is going to trust. Am I going to trust this device to buy the right tea towel for my grandmother if I ask you to do that and
am I
going to
trust
voice?
Am I going to want it listening in and ordering the kids? I found that slightly creepy. You'll be able to broadcast to the house, kids, get ready to go to school, and you know, as they said, kids will hate it.
Yeah, and I think that will take a time. I think the reality is that we are moving to a future where we're going to rely on those devices to do more of that for us, and we're going to get used to the idea of potentially it listening in.
Will we? Big question. Now, I don't know about you, but I get a lot of scam calls, people pretending my computer has a problem or wanting to advise me on how to claim money for an accident that never happened. And quite often, I keep them on the phone, stringing them along.
Now, we are giving you a call from the online technical department of Windows Service Center. Okay.
Okay.
Now, the reason of my call is to let you know that we've been receiving constant errors and warnings from your computer to our satellite server, which indicates your computer has been downloaded by some malicious files.
Now, that one I kept on the phone for so long that when I revealed that I hadn't been taken in by his scam, he said, "You've been wasting my time." Well, it turns out that I'm not alone. There's a rebellion against the scammers, and it's called scam baiting. It may sound like a bit of fun, but it's turning into a valuable public service. As Zoe Kleinman found out when she talked to Wayne, not his real name, who runs the website Scam Survivors.
I was bored one day just looking for funny things, and I discovered something called scam baiting, which is when you pretend to be a victim when you receive one of those emails that everybody gets saying you won this amount of money. So you write back to them saying, "Oh, I won money, what do I do?" And you play them along and you get them to do silly things, or you just have fun with them. And all the information you get, you post up online. So I started doing this, and then I had a romance scammer contact me, and I discovered I was rather good at baiting romance scammers. So for around 6 years, I was concentrating solely on romance scammers. But because there were so few people who do romance baiting, people were coming to me and saying, my mother or my brother or, you know, another family member is being scammed, but they're convinced that they're genuine. Would you bait that person to help prove that they are a scammer?
How many people would you say that you've helped? Is it common?
It's very common. We have around 9,000 to 10,000 people a day come to our site.
A day?
A day. We have forms for people who've been the victim of sextortion, and we can get up to 2 dozen forms a day on that as well.
Wow, and so, that's when people are encouraged to perform, if you like, and then blackmailed, yes, as a result.
Yes, so we have a whole set of steps that people need to take that will talk you through how to deal with it. If there's a video, how to get rid of that.
Well, how do you get rid of it, though?
The video, it's very easy. You just click on the report button. There'll be a flag button on the video. You click on that, explain why. And with places like YouTube, it's gone within about 10, 15 minutes usually.
But surely there are copies all over the place, or there can be.
No, there's not, surprisingly enough, no. The scammers are working so many people at the same time. And this is if they even do post a video up, because most of the time they never do. So one of the steps we say is to use a Google alert, which is when you say, OK, if Google finds my name, send me an email saying, "We found your name and here's where we found it."
What are the most, is there like a trend for a particularly successful form of scam? Is the romance one the most prevalent? Because that really is something everybody's looking for, I suppose, isn't it? That hope that you are being loved.
The romance scam has been around for a long time and it hasn't really changed that much. It hadn't really grown that much. The scammers are now creating fake websites, which will be a fake courier company. And they will say, rather than, can you send me money? I've sent you a gift. Here's the courier company's website. And then they write to the person claiming to be the courier company, saying we need these fees to send you these goods.
So that is quite cunning, isn't it?
It's very clever. It's, as I say, this is something that we've seen probably over the past year or so has grown a lot.
Is this your full-time job?
This is purely voluntary. And the four of us who do this, we all do it on our own time, spend our own money to do it, just to help people.
That's Wayne from Scam Survivors. And you can read more about that story by Zoe Kleinman on the BBC News Technology website from tomorrow. Emily Orton, our special guest from Darktrace, you must be a very sharp person. Are you ever fooled by these scams? When an email pops into your inbox saying you've won the lottery or somebody's left you some money, do you fall for it?
Well, by nature of the industry I'm in, I'm very paranoid. And so, you know, I'd like to think that I'm fairly foolproof. That said, these things are getting more and more sophisticated, so I certainly wouldn't say I'd fall victim to one of them. I think you need to ask, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. If you're getting something out of, you know, if someone's offering you a new love or a holiday or a gift, you know, you've got to ask, what are they getting out of it? And have an eye to detail and look for things like spelling mistakes in emails, which sounds obvious, but they, you know, happen a lot. And it will just tell you that it's probably not legit.
And when something comes on the phone, if somebody called you up and said your Windows computer is broken and we've detected an attack on it, what would you do?
I just think it's so easy to make phone calls if you're a scammer now that I would automatically question that. I wouldn't expect them to communicate with me in that way.
You wouldn't be tempted like I am to keep them on the phone and waste a bit of their time.
I like your perseverance for the cause, Rory, but I'm not sure if I'd even pick up, to be honest.
Mark Ward, what's your attitude to scams? Are you a gullible person?
I'm completely the other way. I've deleted proper emails from my banks thinking they're phishers and things like that. But I think sometimes I'm really excited to see them because, to be honest, I don't think I get that many. I know I have had one call to say, yes, your Windows PC is really messed up and you need to spend this money to sort it out. And it's just so obvious that it was a scam. But yeah, I don't get that many. So when I do see them, I'm actually, yeah, I do try and mess about with them a bit and see what's going on behind them.
Well, my producer, Jat, has just come on my headphones to tell me he's had 3 phishing emails this week. I actually had one from him a few weeks ago. I thought it was from him, but it was from a security company saying it could fool me, and it was successful. Well, we've run out of time. Thanks to my special guest, Emily Orton from Darktrace. Thanks to BBC Technology correspondent Mark Ward. Look out for more from him on that story about the software which uses your computer to mine cryptocurrencies. And don't forget to join us again in the Tech Tent at the same time next week. Before you go, if you're enjoying Tech Tent, then allow me to recommend another offering from the BBC World Service. Just one question first. Do you eat? Well, if you answered yes, then this podcast is for you. The Food Chain is for farmers, foodies and fellow diners. Go to bbc.com/foodchain to find out more.